All right. Well, welcome everybody to the Quill and Query podcast. This is episode 6. See, we're getting up there. I'm starting to lose count of where we are. I think we're on 6.
Hey, yeah.
If not, I'm sorry for the misinformation, but I am Brandon Hall, and I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Ash, who has a delicious mocktail in front of her, and I have Gatorade. So, Ash, how are you doing today?
You know, it's a bad week so far. Yeah. We're just going to keep on keeping on, trying to stay positive, just, you know, how life can be sometimes. So, yeah, what about you? Sounds about the same for you on your end.
Unfortunately, today and yesterday just, and tomorrow's an office day, so I don't think it's going to be much better.
Oh, but yeah.
Trying to stay positive and just get through week.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, we have some fun topics and again some not so fun topics to talk about today. Some of the things we're going to cover are reading habits, book talk division, and some recent event controversies, sorry I can't talk, that seem to be stirring up a little bit of a storm on TikTok and Instagram. But before we get into all that, we're going to do our normal reading check-in. Ash, what are you reading? It looks like maybe almost done with Fragile Threads of Power.
I am almost done with Fragile Threads of Power. I am loving it so far, but I have an ARC review coming up for Dreadful by Caitlin Rosakis, and it has been, I have been flying through it. I'm a little over halfway, and it is it's hysterical. It's so funny. The very loose premise is that a guy wakes up in a dungeon castle, and his memories are gone, and he realizes he was a few minutes before a dark wizard, and he doesn't want to be a dark wizard anymore, and tries to get his memories back while trying to help princess. It's hilarious, very D&D-esque, very lighthearted. So I'm really enjoying it. I'm excited to fully review it. So what are you reading?
Yeah, that sounds really cool. I'm still reading Before They Are Hanged by Joe Abercrombie. Almost done. Okay. I should be finished. I should have a new book by next week. Don't hold me to it.
But nice.
I'm just about done. So I've actually been looking for this. This is kind of a niche request, I think. But if anyone knows of any like Fallout-esque books, I would love to read something like that because I'm in a very Fallout mood with the TV show right now. So
I actually tried to look that up earlier this week when I saw you put in the notes like you were looking for them, and I didn't find anything other than like Fallout lore.
Yeah, it's, so I didn't realize Fallout was so like niche. I guess I thought there would be at least like some copycats or something out there, but no one's really, at least from what I can see, done something similar to Fallout in book form. So
maybe we got to get you into Fallout fan fiction.
Maybe,
and then you can read more Fallout stuff.
That might be where I end up.
There you go.
But podcast updates and audience questions, we don't have any this week, so we can skip right over those. But we do have some indie releases to spotlight now that we're doing those again. So I will start. Looks like we got Nala, a prequel by Sarah Lynn Everhart, one of our anthology authors, out on April 29th. So this is actually out now. So go check that out.
Yeah.
We've got Hylia's Help by Robert Collins out May 1st, so I believe that's tomorrow. And then The Elemental Project by Cassie Corbin releases May 7th, and since that's just outside the week, we'll mention you again next week, just to give you guys a reminder. But yeah, nice little slate of indie releases there. I'll be checking some of those out, especially Sarah Lynn's. I like to keep up with what the anthology authors are doing.
You froze.
Not again.
You froze for a second.
Okay, I think we're safe.
It's okay. Go ahead and, I think we're good.
I was just saying I am excited to check these out, especially I love seeing when the anthology authors come out with something. I always put that on my TBR. I move it up to the top. But
same.
We can jump right into our indie publishing and book topics. This is where all the not so fun topics are this week. I feel like it always is. There's always like some. This week, it's like all controversial topics. But This is where they usually are. So the first one we got is, for those of you who have been following the news, Pan America has canceled its 2024 Literary Awards ceremony, and we're actually going to talk a little bit more about some of the reasons why in our writing discussion. But this was previously scheduled to be held at the Town Hall in New York City on April 29th, so yesterday. And some of the awards are still going to be conferred, but this comes after a ever-increasing criticism of the organization over their response to, you know, what's going on in Gaza and Israel, which ultimately culminated in a bunch of authors withdrawing their books from consideration for awards, and this also included 9 of the 10 authors nominated for the top prize. So, in response, they canceled the event. They're going to still send out some of those awards, but it's not going to be, you know, the big thing that it usually is. So without getting too much into the political discourse right now, this is going to be one of our writing topics about authors, you know, being expected to take certain stances on divisive or controversial topics. And I believe that was something you suggested, Ash, just with your own experiences on Book Talk, if I'm remembering correctly. But always sad to see when these events don't pan out and don't go well, because I think they exist for a good purpose, to celebrate writers and writing and books. And, you know, I think I don't really have a lot to say on this one specifically, but I just know a lot of people have very strong opinions, and that's what ultimately led to the cancellation, because division. But do you have any thoughts on Penn canceling their awards ceremony?
Not necessarily, not without kind of diving into the topics. We'll think it's definitely up to these institutions to, you know, whether or not you agree, to do whatever they feel is best, especially private organizations, not publicly owned or have any, you know, public stake. So, yeah, I mean, I think it sounds like they made the move that was best for them. I think considering how many authors withdrew, it was probably the right move. And maybe some internal discussions about how they can better represent their community. But yeah, that seems to be happening a lot recently.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right, well, our next one, we covered this a little bit last time when the bill passed the House, but it has now, I believe, cleared the Senate and the president's desk. So it's a done deal. The TikTok ban bill has been passed. This gives ByteDance, TikTok's parent company, 9 months to a year to divest itself of the app. Otherwise, the proprietary algorithms that, you know, every social media platform has, and they're very protective of it. They do not want to sell that along with the app, and you would have to sell it. Like, it would be a combo deal. They can't just sell TikTok without the algorithm. So it sounds like if they have to make that choice, you know, this could be them just, you know, trying to be intimidating, or I don't know, you know, maybe when it comes down to it, they'll change their mind and they'll be like, fine, we'll sell. But for now, their official stance is that they're not interested in selling, and they would rather hold on to that very secretive algorithm they have that I know eludes us all. But Ash, I know we covered this a little bit in a previous episode, but what are your thoughts on TikTok potentially being removed from your phone?
Well, I think where there's a will, there's a way. People will still find a way to be on this app regardless. I think the anger over TikTok is misplaced. If people are concerned about data, then let's talk about data and who has it, who owns it. Make laws around that rather than wholesale banning a very like open platform. For all its negative sides, you know, a lot of people get their news from TikTok. And a lot of people make money off of TikTok, small businesses. So I think we'll see. It might do a whole Supreme Court thingy. I don't know.
Yeah. There's so many ways.
I wouldn't freak out just yet, but we'll definitely have to discuss if it does get closer to the deadline. What do people do?
Yeah, definitely. I'm curious to see what will happen to what has become book talk. Like, if the, you know, worst case happens and the app just is banned, and all the legal challenges fail and things like that. I'm definitely going to be watching the community closely to see if they, you know, if we collectively all migrate to the same app, or if it kind of breaks up, or everyone just uses a VPN to access TikTok. I don't know. There's so many different, oh no, it looks like we're losing connection again.
Sorry, my dad called in the middle of this podcast.
Oh, that's okay. I thought we were getting disconnected again with the server.
It's okay. Like, cut my audio off and then, oh gosh, classic dad move.
That's okay. No,
Anyway.
I was just saying I'll be watching very carefully, you know, with, I don't know if we'll all be, end up moving to the same app, if we'll like fragment off into different apps. Maybe everyone will just use a VPN to access TikTok and it'll be the same as it was. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think it's definitely concerning for indie authors who especially do most of their marketing on TikTok. Yeah, I don't know
Yeah.
how to navigate this really until the
Me
time comes
neither.
closer.
Yeah. I know. Maybe it'll work itself out and all of this, kind of discourse won't be necessary, but
Yeah.
we have to see.
Yeah, that would be the ideal. Well, I will let you share this story. This is actually one I'm interested to hear more about because I tried to figure, like, I saw this on Instagram Threads of all places first, and whenever I searched, like, what had happened, I couldn't figure it out. Like, everyone was just talking about, like, oh my God, did you see Readers Take Denver? And I was like, no, I haven't. Tell me what happened. And no one had the answers, at least where I was looking. So maybe you know more than I do.
Okay, so there have been a lot of people who were attended, and I can't even name names off the bat, but a lot of people have been talking about it. So I feel like maybe the hashtag Readers Take Denver or something like that might be a good place for those who want to like really get into the tea. I will not spill all of that here, but so after this year's Reader Take Denver 2024, Readers Take Denver 2025 was canceled after criticism of the organizers' treatment of both authors who paid for the tables to promote themselves and attending guests. Apparently, there was like a huge lack of security as well, and men from a different event snuck into the evening party, and there were claims of assaults that were occurring, and apparently a lot of volunteers were verbally abused. So that is a very overarching concept. Now, Readers Takes Denver is a grassroots event that kind of came from Book Talk becoming a huge deal. A lot of indie authors were present, and a lot of self-published authors were also present, people that I follow personally, both on TikTok and Instagram. Even like Rebecca Yarros, who wrote Fourth Wing, which is like Book Talk's newest biggest thing, was there. So I think if I'm remembering correctly. So it was a huge deal. A lot of people have been speaking about it, but I think it opens up a wider discourse over new author and book events that get created from Book Talk itself, where they stand in our current self-publishing, social media-driven culture. And what we can do better to create spaces that are safe and holistically healthy for everybody attending. I think, I don't want this is I don't the thing about Readers Take Denver is I think it's a great concept, right? Like a very local event for local authors and readers. And it's just such a shame that it went so poorly and there's been so many issues because I feel like we do need more of those that are started for us by us, that are trying to be more inclusive. I don't know if Readers Take Denver had any criticism about that, but yeah, it can be, yeah, it's a sad thing to see, but apparently very necessary because it was not handled well and the organizers did not handle it well either. So anyway, that's the quick and dirty of it.
Well, that is really disappointing to hear, because I think book talk gives rise to a lot of good, and so that sounds like it would be really fun, right? An event that was kind of birthed by book talk, and there's indie authors and readers, and it sounds like it was handled and managed really improperly, and people did not feel respected, which is always a shame. I think I've never tried to organize like an event like that, but when I do try to organize like projects and things like that, especially in the book talk sphere, I think people's mental health and making sure they feel respected and valued is always kind of at the top of my priorities. I hope that's clear in the anthology group. I hope everyone there feels like
Oh, totally.
they are respected and they are valued, and that they can come to me with any issues. So it's, I don't know. I feel like I would like to say if I was holding an event that those things would be top of my mind, and I would want to
Totally.
make sure that those issues were not even, a possibility, but.
I do. I apparently, one of the biggest issues is that they were issuing refunds for tickets for next year, but the authors themselves who or the small businesses that put or purchased tables for the event were not allowed to get their deposit back,
Oh, okay.
which that's not what a deposit's for. A
Yeah.
deposit is for if I cancel the individual,
Yeah.
you still get your money. It is not if you cancel the event. That's not how that works. You know what I mean? You don't get to keep the
Definitely.
money just because it's canceled. So, it seems maybe just a money grab. Who's to say? Lots of speculation. But no, you do a great job with the anthology. Don't you worry. But it is
I
good
hope
to
so.
know that like a lot of people are paying attention to, these things. So I think it's essential. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely not a fan of shady business practices. Give people their deposits back. That's unacceptable. But sounds like it won't be happening again next year, so maybe that's a good thing.
Maybe. Hopefully another event pops up in its place and it's a
Yeah.
little bit more cohesive and welcoming to the community. So
Yeah, and now you have kind of a blueprint of what not to do. So no
yeah,
excuse.
there you go. 100%.
Well, with all those controversies out of the way, maybe we can move into some more fun, lighthearted topics today. Get into our writing discussion. But before that, our work in progress check-in. Looks like you have some good news on that front.
I do. I think I've worked or at least started to work my way out of my writer's block. I, for some reason, still feel really tentative. I feel a little unhinged. I'm not sure if that's just because life is crazy right now. That's probably why. But let the between last episode and this, I was able to get a little over 3,000 words, mostly for the anthology. I'm
Very
almost done
nice.
with part one, which feels good. It's coming out a lot easier, which is great, and I feel like I have a better vision. And like last week, I was like, "Oh no, I think this story is worth telling." So it's been fun. Yeah, it's been feeling good to get back into the groove of it all. So yeah, those are my updates. What about you?
Very nice. I haven't had much time to write this week, so I like that you mentioned that you're getting out of writer's block, or if at least feels like that, because I feel like I not necessarily this week, of maybe a few weeks prior, that I was also emerging from a period of writer's block. Now my struggle is just finding time to write, and that morning routine that I have that I've talked about definitely helps, but sometimes I'm running a little late and it doesn't always work out, or I have other things to do. So it's right now just the struggle is finding dedicated time to write, because I feel I keep taking on new things to do, and then this past week I've been mostly filling that writing time with beta reading for Blades for Hire. Some people have sent me their stories and they're fantastic,
That's great.
but I like to be very like present in that moment when I'm reading their stories and then giving them good feedback that I put a lot of time and effort into that, so that I don't like to give half-hearted feedback. It's really important to me to give useful, actionable critiques. So
Yeah, for sure. No, that's great.
But
It's a good time, even if you're not writing, it's
yeah,
good.
it's
It's
still
time well
like
spent for sure.
writing related work. It's just not my writing, so
Yeah. Right. It still counts.
but it's still going towards Blaze for Hire, which makes me happy. So all right, well, we have 3 weekly writing topics like usual. So this one is going to kind of be a
Okay.
follow-up to some of the controversies we covered because I feel like they're a little bit connected. And this was your idea, so I want to thank you for suggesting this because it's something that's been on like in the back of my mind on Book Talk a little bit as well. But I didn't even think to talk about it on here. So you'd mentioned the feeling of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you had mentioned feeling personally on Book Talk, like there's a pressure to speak out on issues, whether or not you feel qualified to do so or if it's appropriate. Like it feels like there's a an audience expectation that you need to share your opinion on everything. And I'll let you kind of dive into more of the specifics because I don't know if I did that justice here or
No, you
on,
did, I think.
but yeah, just talk about your experience, you know, with that, because I think I'll be able to relate to that quite a bit, because I personally try to steer clear of those things, but I definitely feel the pressure, whether it's comments on other people's videos or comments on my videos, just kind of asking for an opinion that I don't want to share.
No, so yeah, you're spot on. I think it's a hard topic. For us smaller creators who are just kind of living our daily lives, and doing our best, it can feel super overwhelming. There is no playbook to guide us, when a situation arises, such as someone, calling you out or, oh, I don't see you speaking on this topic. It can feel like, oh my gosh, I am not doing enough on whatever topic it is. Okay, part of me feels like we should not be looking overarchingly to celebrities, to people in the public sphere, unless they are elected representatives, to be a moral guide for what to and to not support, specifically celebrities, and I include famous book authors as well in that because they can hold a lot of sway. I understand that authors can imbue a lot of meaning into their writing. That's what we do. So I also understand the criticism of that, that certain themes can come through that potentially offend others or are a little too close to what's occurring right now in their books. So again, it's just not an easy topic to discuss without somebody, being upset about it. That's the not giving authors or celebrities my time and effort is where I tend to lean. So when someone criticizes me, it's happened in a couple of my videos for not being outwardly more supportive of an event or a political crisis or something. I don't know why I'm being asked to be the voice on something when there are so many other people doing better work. I am just someone from my state and I do my best. I vote, I donate behind the scenes. I, do all the things privately, which is just kind of how I've always operated. After the 2020 protests, which really messed my city up, I was constantly on Twitter, I was constantly on Instagram, I was constantly on TikTok. I mean, I was by the end of it, in 2021, I had such empathy fatigue that it was really hard for me to do much of anything. I had to like purge, which is a what do you call it? A privilege unto itself, right? That is something that I can do. It's not my lived experience. I'm not experiencing it every day. So there are all these like yes ands, buts though. You know what I mean? It's so I don't know. I think for me, I'm just not going to speak on it unless I have enough education on the topic, right? I don't, if you see me on my book talk not speaking about an atrocity, it doesn't mean that I'm not actively doing something behind the scenes in my own personal day-to-day life. My TikTok is a persona. It is what I put on for everybody else. And I will share sometimes, I will like repost sometimes, but I don't think how publicly and openly you discuss something indicates how you actually feel, right? So yeah, that's, I don't comment usually. I will repost, like I said, but I just try and keep to myself when it comes to this kind of stuff. You know, there's been recently, like Sarah J. Maas is getting a lot of heat. Leigh Bardugo has gotten a lot of heat with her new release, The Familiar, for not saying she's, you know, pro-Palestine, anti-Israel, whatever. And that's kind of recently where this like thought came from. I'm like, should we be looking into Leigh Bardugo for where our political alliances or our social justice should come from? I don't know. I don't know. And I know some people disagree with me completely and holistically, and that is totally fine, and I understand. But yeah, that's just, I'm me, and I'm doing everything I can within my ability. And I don't think I owe anybody that like constant, this is what I'm doing, checking the boxes. It's not performative. I'm not a performative person in that way. So anyway, that's how I feel about it.
No, you made a lot of great points, and I think I feel mostly the same. Ultimately, and I wouldn't say my face and voice are like very present on TikTok. A lot of what I post as in form of videos is like memes and stuff like that. But it's still a persona, like you said. Like what you see of me is not what I am doing 24/7, all day, every day. Like I would love to be spending time with books 24/7, but you know, I have a life. So I like you said, I vote. You know, I volunteer where I can. I will donate if I feel compelled to. But I also don't feel obligated to share all of that with the world, or like it's like my voice has any more weight than anyone else's, I guess. Like if someone comes to me for an opinion on a topic that I'm not qualified to speak on, I would question their motive. Like,
Yeah,
what am I
totally.
gonna do that is going to benefit your cause at the end of the day? Like, I'm just one small person on Book Talk. If anything, the only thing I'm gonna do is damage my author brand somehow by speaking, you know, misspeaking or, and I think that's another thing people have to consider too, is as much as authors are people, they're also like it's a brand that you have to present to readers. And you know, diving heavily into controversial topics or political issues can be very off-putting to people. So like if someone's coming to my profile because they see I'm a book talker and they want to see book content, and then they're bombarded by all my political opinions, I'm not going to be reaching the audience that I want to. Like I've and that's why I write too, right? Like I share my values in what I write, and you can infer from my future books how I stand on some of these issues, I feel like. And that's the best way I can communicate those things. I don't think I'm an effective communicator like that can come out and, you know, I have all the solutions and my opinion is the correct one. but no, I completely agree. Like I think there are certain people you should look to for these, you know, for these topics to speak out. And I don't think celebrities or indie authors are the people who are, you know, appropriate for that. Now, I also don't have a problem if someone feels, you know, particularly moved by an issue to speak on it publicly. That's just not my personal approach, I guess. I usually don't, unless it's like an egregious human rights violation that's pretty black and white or something like that. And even in those cases, you know, that's a rare instance. So, yeah, I don't really have a lot to add. Just, don't expect me either to come out and take a stand on most of these issues, especially if it's not something I'm informed on.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I'll do is speak before knowing all the facts on something, just because I'm always afraid of sounding like an idiot in general. And so, that's like dangerous territory when you get into the controversial stuff. But no, I think you put it really well, and my stance is pretty much the same.
Sorry, thought I heard something coming up the stairs, and it's just me and my dog. It's like, oh, what's going on?
Mira.
Yeah, no, it's Mira. Well, she's not up here, but then it doesn't sound like her coming out. You know when those weird things happen?
Yeah.
Ooh, spooky. Yeah, it's hard. It's a fine balance. It's like, we do have a public persona, but also at the same time, I am not, you know, I don't know why you're looking to me for an opinion other than validation, perhaps, or, you know, there's a lot of psychology behind it for sure. I think we tend to forget that there's like a life outside of the people on the internet, and that like, just because on their book talk or on their platform, or they just like talk about random stuff, whatever they choose to, that's not necessarily their lack of responses doesn't mean that they don't actually care or aren't actually doing something behind the scenes. And I think there's a larger discussion outside of this too, of like privacy. Like, you are a public figure essentially because you put yourself out on the internet, right? So you're taking on the potential for criticism. Someone may stitch you and yell at you, and then you might get hate, and then you might, you know, all these things. This is the internet. It's like the wild, wild west still. So, you know, understanding this, that you do take on a certain amount of risk, whatever that may be. I say that in air quotes for those who listen in the future. But yeah, I don't really owe anybody anything, right? On a one TikTok account that I discuss books on. And so that's just how I feel. Doesn't mean I'm not doing anything, you know. I just don't share that stuff. It's just not, you know. Anyway, there's a lot of discourse around it, and some people say silence is violence, and some people, you know, there's all this back and forth. And so yeah, it's a tricky subject. It's, at least right now, this is where I stand, just in order to protect my own peace, again, and privilege unto itself. But yeah, at the same time, it's like, you're commenting on my not, I'm making a funny TikTok and you're making it political, and it's like, oh no, like, I'm aware that this is going on. I'm just not talking about it on an account for books. Controversial. I'm sure someone will have something to say eventually, but that's okay.
They always do. Like you said,
I should not be your moral guide.
No, totally agree. Nothing to add there. But all right, moving away from the controversial stuff into some more fun stuff. I wanted to talk about reading habits today, because I was thinking about this as I was getting ready to read the other day, and I remembered you talked about kind of setting the mood when it comes to like making an atmosphere for yourself when you sit down to read. And so this might be kind of double dipping into some of that, but I was just curious, what are your general reading habits like? Like, is it always like you got to set the mood, you got to have a candle, you got to have a drink, the lighting's got to be right, or will you just sometimes sit down and read a book with none of that, or, you know, go into that as much as you want to?
No, so I am, when I can, I like to set the mood. It's like taking a warm bath, you know, you light the candle, you get your like fun bath bomb, whatever. I like to make it special nowadays. I didn't used to. I mean, like pre-college, which is so, so long ago, but pre-college and grad school, I was in class, I would get in trouble for reading, right? Like, oh, you need to do your work, whatever. I would read on the bus, I'd read in the car, I'd read in blah, blah, blah. I mean, I would read everywhere. And then school kicks in, and obviously you're reading for function rather than enjoyment. And then it took me a long time to get back into reading for pleasure post-grad school. And I, as a mood reader, will have stints. I'll go like a couple months really, which is like not, you know, not recently, but sometimes it can be hard just to finish a book, which is whatever. So with that context in mind, because it has been such like a slow learn back into reading and enjoying it and not feeling the need to like, I need to read 15 books to keep up with everybody.
Yeah.
I like to set the mood. It makes it special. It makes it feel more intentional. But no, not always. I would say it's a good 50-50. If my partner is playing a video game or watching a movie that I'm not interested in, I'll just bust it out and, you know, just read, no problem. I'll read at work sometimes if it's particularly slow. So no, I don't have any like hard habits that have to occur every time.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, if you can make, if you're struggling to read, if you're struggling to make time to read, the moments you are able to sit down with a book, make it special. Light the candle, set the YouTube video, you know, up for like an aesthetic moment, and just enjoy it and appreciate the fact that you have the time to do so. I think that's been the most fun for me. I look forward to like doing the whole ritual of it all.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's a nice day and I just go sit out back and I read. It's no big deal. What about you? Do you have like a, do you have a ritual that you do?
So, you know, as I have kind of adapted to this new routine, I found that having certain consistent habits makes me read more and helps me read faster. So doing things, little things, I don't think I go as far as you when it comes to setting the mood, but I would love to. But
treat so yourself.
what I do right now is like, okay, I get back from the gym in the morning. I got like an hour before work. So I'll sit down, I'll have my coffee, I'll read whatever I'm currently reading, and I'll put on some, I think we talked about this a little bit before, some instrumental music in the background that I think fits the tone of what I'm reading. And that, just that is enough to, even on days where I'm like, oh, I really don't want to read right now, it gets me in the mood pretty quickly. So I agree that if you're struggling to read, try doing little things like that, that kind of just make it a little more special. You know, I don't think it's going to hurt your reading experience at all. So, and if anything, it's only improved it for me. I don't do that every time I read. I kind of, my reading habits are a little varied. Like that's every morning. That's pretty consistent. But if I'm reading outside of that, it's kind of completely random. Like it might be an audiobook that I'm listening to on a long drive. Like I see I have 40 minutes to my destination, so I put it on because I don't want to listen to music. But it's outside of that morning, like 30 minutes, 45 minutes of reading that I get, it can be pretty varied. But I try to have that consistency in the morning, just because that's when I get most reading done and when I enjoy it the most. But
I think it's also learning when the best time for you is. You know, it's like with our busy adult lives, it's like, no, I have to carve out time. And even if it's only 30 minutes, that's what, a chapter plus that you're going to be able to enjoy and get through. And I think it helps just like taking a break from the screen, which is hard for me right now. I'm having a really hard time separating myself from the screen and just going analog.
No, it can be hard. I feel like my day is just moving from one screen to another. So
I know, especially as a writer.
Yeah.
Right on another screen. I've been staring at my computer all day.
No, actually, on that topic. Yeah. Format of books, how important is that to you? Like, are you someone who needs the paperback and kind of like that texture feel in your hand, or can you do an ebook, or do you prefer audiobook, or can you kind of just hop between all of those?
So I prefer a physical book. But in the land of advanced reader copies, most of them come in ebooks or e-copies. So I have learned, and I have Kindle Unlimited for just my silly romance stuff. So I've learned to enjoy and appreciate my iPad. What I do with the iPad portion, I would say my reading is like 80-20. I'm a very bad audiobook person. Unless I'm going on a really long ride and it's a book I've read before,
Yeah.
I don't really do audiobooks. I find it challenging to pick up on details
Yeah.
and make like predictions or catch any nuance when I'm listening because I very often get distracted and then I'm like, oh, what did they just say? So 80% physical book, 20% ebook. I have made it easier on myself when reading from my iPad. I have the Kindle Unlimited app or the Kindle app that links to my Kindle Unlimited account. And I have a pillow, like a book pillow, that also my iPad can sit on. So I can like lay or like kind of just be on the couch and I don't have to hold it, which helps. And then I have a little ring that is supposed to be a TikTok scroller, but it can work with your Kindle app as well. And I can just, with my little ring on my finger, click. So I don't have to like constantly be swiping. And it sounds lazy for sure, but it makes it so much more enjoyable because I don't have to just like sit with an iPad and feel like I'm scrolling. It becomes just like the turning of a page automatic. You don't really think about it. And it's helped. It really has helped a lot. I tend to read faster with an ebook. And I think it's just because the words are smaller on the page. Well, not smaller, but the page sizes are different, right? Like it's less than a book, so you just swipe fast. Anyway, I prefer physical book. That'll always do it for me.
No, I'm
About
kind
you?
of I'm definitely the same as far as like preference for physical. I do best just reading a physical copy. It can be paperback, it can be hardcover, it doesn't matter. When it comes to ebooks and audiobooks, I really try, but my ADHD can get the better of me sometimes. An ebook, so I don't have a dedicated e-reader. I feel like if I had one, I would do great with it. But most of my ebooks I read on my phone, and the problem with my phone is there's other apps on my phone that are very distracting. So I don't do so well reading on my phone. Dedicated e-reader where I can't switch over to TikTok and scroll, that would be fine. I could do that. And
I
I
hear
really
you on
like the
that.
ones I really like the ones that have that like look like paper. Like it's not like a bright
Yeah.
screen hitting your eyes. I think that's really nice. My brother has a couple of those. I've just been
Yeah.
putting off picking one up, but I think I really should because I do like to switch it up
You should.
sometimes. And then with audiobooks, audiobooks are a mixed bag for me. I can listen to them like on the road and that'll be fine. I try to listen to them at work, but sometimes I'm too focused on work. And then I miss like 5 minutes and I'm like, wait, I gotta tap the rewind button. So
The
doesn't
only time I'll
always.
really use an audiobook is when I'm like, I am about to go to book club and I haven't finished like the last half of something. I'll like emergency audiobook because of that exact reason. I'm at work for, 9 hours a day. There's no way I can do my job and listen to this audiobook at the same time. So I'm like, what do they say? So yeah, totally.
And even if I try to like put it on while I'm cleaning the house or something, I'll still zone out. Like it's really strictly right now just driving or something.
Yeah, it's gotta be standing in one or sitting in one spot with nothing else to do aside from just stare at the road. Yeah, I'm right there with you 100%.
So I have an interesting follow-up question, and since I know you said you're not big on the audiobooks, do you listen when you do listen to an audiobook, what speed do you put the voice
Okay, so controversial for sure. Before I say what I do, I have met so many people who are like, yeah, I listen at 1.75, I listen at 2 times the speed. I think those people are psychopaths. And if you are one of those people, you are a psychopath, okay? I understand some people have like audio, like they need that for, ADHD or something, the way their brain works. I want to acknowledge that too. But if you don't, that's crazy to me. Like, why are we rushing? It sounds like a Muppet. I just don't get it. I really don't. I have to listen at the speed that it is being spoken. One, because I will miss something, guaranteed at the speed faster than that. And two, the voices sound so much more comedic if they're upped you know, it sounds like a joke.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, like their voices are higher, and then the masculine men sounds are not the way they're supposed to. I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, no, it's I'm right there with you. I can so
Okay. I was like,
depending
please don't be offended.
it depends on like the speaker. I've had a few where I've had to adjust it slightly. The most I'll ever go is 1.25 for and that's for when the speaker's really slow.
Yes.
I've also done the reverse where I've done this guy's way too fast. I need 0.75 because he's talking too fast at the base speed. But that's kind of my range, like a quarter up or down. My one brother has told me he's listened to audiobooks at 2 times speed before. Now he does have ADHD, so I'll give him that. But I couldn't do that. I can now I'll also say I do listen sometimes when I'm listening to like a YouTube video, I'll double the speed. I don't know if that's gonna ruffle some feathers, but I can't do it with an audiobook because I feel like when it comes to a book, I'm trying to pay a little more attention and I can't absorb the information that fast.
No, I can't either. I'm already struggling. I don't need to just like, it's not a sprint, you know? And that's the thing is, maybe here's an adjacent topic, but I spoke about it today on like a silly TikTok that I made. But I feel like there's a lot of pressure for people on BookTok to read so many books in a month so that they can have good end of month wraps or like hit their goals. And I acknowledge that I enjoy those videos, especially from the big BookTokers who essentially now make commission or make a decent enough income off of their content that they are able or they have a job that affords them to be able to do that kind of stuff. But with that, I feel like there comes like a lot of pressure to read or listen to books more than you might want to naturally do. And I feel like I've seen people discuss like in order to get to their goal, they'll put books on two speed so that they can like get through it. And that's when I'm kind of like, okay, we're not speeding up just because we have ADHD or something that like helps us get through it. We're speeding up to rush the process. And that's your process, and that's totally fine, but it comes with a lot of expectations for like others to do the same. And that kind of bothers me. It's like one of those weird like book talk icks that I have that I'm just kind of like, it's not a competition. We're not in a race. If you're racing yourself, I understand, but then you're putting it out there to be like, I had to read this on 2.5 speed so that I could get my check mark for the month. And it's kind of like, but are you going to remember the content? Like, if I were to give you a quiz on the book, would you know? It's usually like, maybe not. No hate to people who do that. I just, yeah, it makes me anxious if it's faster than normal speed. I'm like, oh my God. I start to sweat. I'm like, okay, we're on a race. I gotta go run. What are we doing?
No, I completely agree because I sometimes I'll go on like a new BookTokers channel and they'll have like their book goal for the year in their bio and it'll be like I've read 110 out of 50 this year and I'm like I've read two but no I used to want to keep up with those people and I and even not just when it comes to books just kind of all forms of entertainment I've really had to tell myself to slow down and it's entertainment. I'm supposed to be having fun. Like,
Yes, and relax.
I've done it. I did it with video games for so long where I would just like sit there and try to rush through the games and I'm like, I'm not having fun. This isn't fun anymore. And it's a game. It's supposed to be fun. And then yeah, with a book, I wouldn't be able to absorb the information because I'd be too stressed out about getting to the end. So I think you know, it's nice to set goals for yourself, but I think once it becomes a detriment to where like you're not enjoying the hobby or you're more focused on those numbers than you know the content of the book or just having a good time, then it kind of becomes unhealthy in my opinion, at least in my experience. I've had to tell myself more often than not that it's okay if I don't read 100 books in the year like everybody else. It's okay
No,
if I
definitely.
only read one series, you know, 'cause I know that that series is going to stay in my mind. I'm going to be able to, you know, recall the events that happened. And it would, you know, my personal experience doesn't have to be the same as everybody else's.
No, definitely not.
I can enjoy things at a slower pace, and that's fine. but it's definitely
For
hard
sure.
to, I feel like it's hard with social media to accept that or to kind of set your own pace with those things when you see people doing things so much faster.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it should be fun. And if it's fun for you to read 110 books in a year, more power to you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, our next one, I don't know if you've seen this as much on your in your circle, but at least in my corner of book talk, I've seen people stitching each other back and forth about objectivity in art and you know, how much, I'm trying to explain this correctly, like how much of art is can be objectively good or bad and how much of it is just, you know, your own opinion. And there are, I've seen so many different opinions on this topic, which to me says that it's not all that objective, but I'll get into that in a little bit. but I was just curious what your thoughts about this is. Like when it comes to, let's keep it book related, I guess. When you read a book,
sure,
are you looking at things purely from an objective standpoint? Like when you judge a book, is it this book was objectively bad? It's poorly written, and if you like it, you like a bad book. Like, I've seen people make that argument to other people who are like, well, I enjoyed it, and they're like, that's okay, you just like bad books. And I feel, it's, like, really condescending sometimes, but no,
yeah.
Everyone has a different opinion on this, and I was curious. I was like, I wonder what Ash thinks about this. So how much of books do you think is, you know, just a matter of taste, and how much of it is like, yeah, it's objectively good or bad?
All right. I feel like I'm going to ruffle some feathers here.
Do
and
it.
I just want to acknowledge that I'm going in knowing this. Okay. So you can come for my throat later or now, whatever. art can be objectively good or bad. Yeah, I think so. I think while it is subjective,
mm-hmm.
times, yeah, we have book awards for best books, for best books in a genre, for best book of the year, for best this, for best that. So the standards are there,
mm-hmm.
right, to consider collectively whether or not something is good at Goodreads, right? Like,
yeah.
Good books of the year. So enough people vote and say this book was objectively good enough to receive this award or receive this honor. And that's just kind of my stance. You can enjoy objectively bad books. I do. I do it all the time.
Yeah.
You can enjoy it, right? But if you're going to stand there and say this was a good book and it is very obviously not a good book, then it's not objectively good. It is subjectively good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of discourse really upsets me, mm-hmm. and kind of grinds my gears, because on one hand, I completely acknowledge that one person might not like a book and another person does,
mm-hmm.
right? But there are different levels of book, you know what
yeah.
I mean? so I think people get upset when they find their favorites are criticized. It's
yeah.
across the board, whatever interest you have, whether it be sports, movies, TV, books,
mm-hmm.
someone's not going to like it.
Yeah.
Someone's going to say this person sucks. And so you got to have a little bit of that understanding that differences of opinion are going to exist and someone's going to hate your favorite book.
Yeah.
But yeah, some books are better than others. Hate to say it. It's like, it's the whole phrase, like, don't judge a book by its cover. What do you mean? I'm going to pick up a book if the cover looks nice or pretty
yeah.
or appeals to my aesthetic, and then I'm going to read the inside and see if it's something I like. So yeah, some books are objectively bad, I think. In the realm of public opinion here on TikTok, that is a dangerous thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think people get really offended, and that's okay. That's my opinion.
You actually, I like to like guess how you're gonna answer things, and you actually were like I was completely off on that one. I'm usually right, but
really,
I thought you were gonna be more on the subjective side for some reason. I don't know why. I just thought you were gonna be more in that camp. No, I don't know where this is such a weird argument, and I haven't weighed in on it for several reasons, because when you post it, not saying you specifically, but when someone poses the question to me, like, is art subjective? Immediately my mind goes to like, how deep are we taking that question? Because ultimately I feel like if you take most concepts or like societal constructs, a lot of things are based on humans pretending certain things exist. Like, I don't know if I'm making sense there, but like value of money, for example, this is completely unrelated, but this is something that money objectively has value in our world. But if you take it outside of human society, it means nothing. So like it has value, but it's like it has objective value in our society, but ultimately that's kind of a subjective construct just of the world we've built. So what How far are we taking the discussion, I guess, of art being subjective? Like, yeah, I guess ultimately, like, there's not a universal law like gravity that defines what's good or bad art, but in the realm of the standards that we've kind of collectively agreed on as a society, there's definitely good and bad there. So I feel like that's kind of where I've always struggled with this topic. I think, people mostly mean like what you said, like in our society, what defines good versus, what makes a good book or a bad book. But I guess I just think about it a little differently. So it's a weird question to me.
I don't think that's I think that's a very normal way to think, though. I feel like if I'm following your train of thought correctly, it's like we've all agreed, when books get awards, a group of people agree that these are the parameters in which a book is considered the best, right? But we all had to create that. So enough people have to agree on these parameters that, sure, this is the standard. Those standards change, right?
Absolutely.
How we view art. Nowadays, people are way more analytical of the people behind the art itself. 30 years ago, no one was discussing how horrible Picasso was to all the people in his life. Turns out he was a piece of shit, right? And that kind of changes what we think about him and his art. So I agree with you. I think it is a tricky question when you consider that we made this all up. So can you truly be objective when you say a book is good or bad? Probably not. Because it is up to the realm of public opinion at the end of the day. But I do think because we understand that we exist in those parameters, that you can say definitively if a book is good or bad. One of my worst hot takes on TikTok that got me in a lot of flack from some of my friends was that I said Fourth Wing was trash, right? I read it and I was like, because the parameters in my mind of what makes a good book are certainly subjective, of course, but I do think that a lot was like blown out of proportion. It was not amazing.
Clockwork.
I did not find it. That's all right. I found it messy. I found the prose messy. I found it not all of these factors that I'm like, this is how I gauge a book. But the realm of public opinion disagreed with me. So I can still say objectively it's a bad book, despite a bunch of people saying I'm wrong. And so, yeah, it's a teeter totter, right? It's like, whatever. But yeah, it's a tricky question, but yeah, art can be objectively horrid.
No, I agree there. Like, I think within the parameters we've set, like you said, there are good books and there are bad books. That said, you can still enjoy whatever you like. I certainly
100%.
I can't think of any books that I found to be poorly written that I also enjoyed, because usually if I find a book bad, I don't keep reading it. But I will say, like, from coming from other forms of entertainment, like film or video games, there's definitely bad movies and bad games that I will still watch and play all the time. So I can understand how it would be the same for books. It's just I haven't had that one, yes, like, trash book that I'm like, but I like it yet.
Yes. No, 100%. I think, yeah, that's a really good point, too, of, like, yeah, you can love it. Mm-hmm. You can be like, and I'll say, if you want a treasure trove of objectively bad books that are still fun as hell, yeah, Kindle Unlimited is full of them. And that's, I have my guilty pleasure books that I'm like, no, this is trash, and I know it is. Oh my god, is it so fun, right? I'm going in to be entertained, mm-hmm, right? And I think that's a component that we don't really mention, is that what's your goal when you're reading this book? Yeah. If I read a really popular book talk book, I am going in to review it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be critical. I'm going to be taking my time with understanding the nuance. And if I get an advanced reader's copy, same exact thing, so that I can give my opinion and say, I went at this with as much, you know, forethought and intention as possible. When I get on Kindle Unlimited, I don't want to do that. I don't care. I just want fun. I want monster romance stuff, like, whatever.
Yeah.
I just don't, you know. And so when I read a 200-page novella about the most ridiculous shit in the world, I'm not going to say, like, this should win a Pulitzer, right? But it was fun.
Yeah.
And I'm not mad about it. So intentionality is important, too.
Yeah.
I think that gets removed from the conversation. And I do think you should be, like, a little critical of the novels that you read if it's, like, from a big publisher. Mm-hmm. But maybe, like, the self-publishing indie industry is a little bit more loose with those kind of parameters. Like, because we are all just trying our best, because we are all just trying to tell our stories, it might be a little bit easier to just say, like, oh, no, subjectively, this wasn't my book, but, you know, we're creating those new standards for a much smaller community.
Yeah. Well, I do, since we have a little bit of time, I'm curious, when you are reading a book that you think is objectively bad, what are some of the criteria you base that off of, like, that judgment? Like, what makes a book objectively bad in your opinion? And then also the flip side of that, what would make it objectively good? Do you have answers for that? Or not really, sorry. Sorry to put you on the spot like that.
So, no, that's okay. I do have standards. I think the big three, which seem kind of just like a cop-out, but mm-hmm, I genuinely am looking for these things. Pacing is a big one. Mm-hmm. If the pace is, if it feels rushed or forced, and when I say that, I mean, are we forcing the characters to do things, even if we've just met them? Are we missing pieces of their character, and so they're doing something quickly and you're like, whoa, what's going on? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Or are we rushing to get to the point too quickly and too obviously? Mm-hmm. That's when I will be like, oof, okay. That's kind of like check mark number one. I think the second one is also world building. Even if it is a fiction novel, I need it to feel real.
Yeah.
I need it to be believable, even in a fantasy setting enough. Even if there's magic, there has to be even basic rules in place for it to feel like, okay, I'm lost in this novel, because the world building is good enough that I'm like, oh, this could be plausible. Mm-hmm. More often than not, especially in romanticies, which is, it's a genre I read quite a lot in.
Yeah.
I find that there is very little care for that. And it's a romantic fantasy, so I understand the stakes are pretty low. Mm-hmm. But I still need to feel like the characters are grounded in place. So if the characters don't feel that way, I'm not going to care. And three, dialogue. Mm-hmm. If the dialogue is too modern for a fantasy, or too out of place for the setting, even if it's not a fantasy.
Yeah.
If it feels forced, if there's not enough then prose behind it, essentially, or, you know, enough behind it to, it not just like a block of text of like, that she says this and she says that. I need to feel like it's a natural conversation. Yeah, so those, I guess those are my big three. Those are, if we're not, if your book doesn't do all three, that's okay. But if I get to X's of all three, I'm just kind of like, I just, yeah, this is subjectively not a good book. Yeah. Do you have statements like that? Not that I'm like not the go-to person. Don't come for me, but.
No, I definitely do. So there's two big ones that come to mind immediately, and I'm struggling to think of the others because there's kind of more nuance to the other ones, I feel like. But all right, first one is obviously gonna be, and this might seem like an easier, an obvious answer, but I've read of a lot of books that don't do it well. So grammar and like proper formatting and things like that. I've read some indie books that don't seem to put any attention on, like it seems like they had spell check turned off and they just kind of formatted it however they wanted. So I feel like if you can't structure a paragraph or an English sentence properly or punctuate it or spell things correctly, like that's immediately gonna be poorly written to me because you didn't take the time to I mean there's tools that do that for you now. You don't have to put too much effort into it, but
100%.
so immediately that just screams like low effort to me, which in turn usually means poorly written. But the I would say the biggest thing is prose and I don't know. I'm struggling to think if I should say this other one, but I'll dive into prose a little bit. Prose is really important to me. Like I really like authors who can use words and like paint a picture with them, and they use language in such a masterful way that I'm like almost jealous of. And then there's other authors who use more simple language to convey, what they're trying to get across. So I'm definite when it comes to whether I think a book is objectively good or bad, it's not like the simple prose is going to be bad and the more flowery lyrical prose is going to be objectively good, but they're like big determining factors. Like if I'm reading an author who I think has really good prose, I immediately kind of start pushing them towards that. This is an author who knows how to use the English language like really effectively, whereas over here the and nothing wrong with the more simple language. To me, it just demonstrates less experience or less expertise with using the language to your advantage and kind of painting those pictures. I just feel like, I don't know, prose is such a big thing to me.
Yeah, for sure.
It's probably the biggest determining factor in how much I enjoy a book and I'm going to pick it back up and things like that. So
Yeah,
that's not to say,
definitely.
like I said, that the simple prose turns me off and makes me think it's objectively bad. It's just kind of, it's correlation, not causation for me. So,
No, for sure.
and then, I like the ones you said, like the characters and the world building got to be, they got to be good and things have to feel original to me as well. Like if something feels very derivative, that also speaks of lack of experience to me. So, but yeah, I struggle when it comes to like other things because it really comes down to like prose and then grammatical structure and how well like themes are handled as well. Like if I feel like getting certain messages through your writing without feeling like you're, hammering it over the reader's head. There's a tactfulness to doing that I feel like not every author has. So there's just like little things that to me demonstrate someone really knows how to tell a story effectively and they know how to use the language to do it well. And then there's things that say, okay, this person has less experience, but they've still got the right idea. Sorry, I
That's
kind of
perfect
rambled a
for
little
you.
bit there, but
No, go. I love it. I because I yeah, I think that's all those are all great things. It's funny though, you say simple prose, I do think what I try and do, I don't know if you feel the same way. I tend to lean more towards the flowery, sometimes to my detriment. I had the opposite of white room syndrome where in I have to work on my dialogue way better, or I have to be more intentional with my dialogue and try not to forget that people need to speak, because I will just kind of go on and on. But some of my favorite authors, I appreciate how they can say so much in so little.
Yes.
I think simple, like you were saying, and I'm not disagreeing with you, simple is often mistaken for not well crafted.
Yeah.
When I find it is almost sometimes harder to be more simple. You have to be way more strategic and be a better word craftsman sometimes.
Yeah.
In order to say a lot in a little. And I think Patrick Rothfuss does that really well. Like he has his moments where he'll kind of like go on and, you know, the sentences will be full. But most of the time, he's one of those people that says, he uses language so well that he doesn't need all these sentences to put you in the scene and ground you there. And it's a skill that I'm envious of. It's really challenging sometimes to kind of like throttle back and be like, okay, I've got a huge paragraph here.
Yeah.
What can I remove? What can I thesaurus to, I've used this, I don't like to repeat words over and over again. So I will, if I'm going to use the same word in a paragraph, I'll try and find a different word for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are all great things. Sorry, I kind of went on a tangent, but.
No, that's okay. You actually, I was struggling to form some of those thoughts and you kind of helped there. So when I said, when I was saying like simple versus like more flowery prose, I don't necessarily mean like sometimes yes, like the shorter, more simple sentences and paragraphs is what I'm referring to. But also like I'm reading Joe Abercrombie right now and I feel like every sentence I read has like layers to it and they're concise, but it feels like he's like, if it all feels intentional, like the sentence is crafted in a way that, whereas he could have used three sentences to say this, he used one. And I think that's important.
Yes.
Like you mentioned, knowing when to cut things down. I've definitely read books that feel like they didn't know how to do that. And there was a little too much fluff,
sure.
Using too much words, or too many words. Yeah. Sorry. I promise.
Yeah.
I know how to talk. No, so when I say simple versus flowery, I don't necessarily mean like short versus long or like difficult to read words versus like very basic words, but sometimes better prose could be that, like using one sentence instead of three and not knowing where to cut down. But anyway, sorry.
No, that's okay. No, I think that, you know, I'm using, this is such a not book-related tangent. I use my phone for these.
Yeah.
And I share a calendar with my partner. So anytime he updates his calendar, I get notifications. And it's the most annoying thing in the world. Anyway.
No, that's apologies.
Okay. No, that was a really good, I think that was a great discussion. And again, everyone's parameters are going to be different, but I feel like as us, we are an example, rather, of how there are kind of common themes and similarities that can make a book objectively great that most people will look for. It depends on the genre, too. Mm-hmm. If I'm reading a fiction, my expectations are different versus a fantasy. If it's set in the real world, I don't need a ton of world building because I live here, unless it's somewhere I've never been. So yeah, it is. It's interesting, but someone's probably going to comment and be like, oh, I'm ready for it though.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before we wrap up here, we have some writing resources to share again. We didn't forget this time.
We didn't.
I will let you share your resource first. What do you got for us this week, Ash?
So I have, and I'm sure a bunch of people already know about this one, but I used this earlier this week, and I don't know if I've mentioned it before. It's a Tumblr blog called Writing with Color, and it's a really old resource, essentially, but I think it still is kind of updated every now and then.
Yeah.
It's how to write people of color and other ethnicities and demographics without being racist or stereotypical. Surprisingly, not surprisingly, I'm being sarcastic, it comes in useful all the time. Even if it's just to double check your own biases and make sure that you are not saying something that you didn't realize might be offensive to somebody. Also just a really good way to kind of work on specifically like how you describe skin color, if you're trying to be more diverse in your writing. So again, I'm sure everyone knows about it, but I was like, let me bring it back up. Did I already mention this?
Like, have you shared it before? No, I don't think you've shared this one. We have talked about like diversity and how we approach it in our writing though. So I think this is kind of a nice follow-up resource to that. And I actually didn't know about this. And I liked specifically when you mentioned skin color, because I feel like that's something I always struggle to describe. Like, I really struggle with thinking something is going to sound wrong or, like, offensive. And I never want... obviously, that's not the intent. So it's nice to know there's a resource out there for people like me.
Yeah. It gives, like, good photos and, like, color... examples too. It discusses like undertones, which is not something you really consider, but it is really good to have. And it also very much describes describes the big words and the big things not to use, which I have unfortunately seen recently in some people's stuff. I'm like, oh, this would be a good resource to share then for you.
Yeah, definitely.
That way, you know. Anyway, so there you go. What are yours planned?
I almost forgot what they were for a second, but okay, so I have two this week because they kind of go together, and they were both really helpful when it came to outlining my debut, which is not out yet still, but A Knight of Knives. So it's two books. The first one is How to Write a Mystery, and this is by the Mystery Writers of America, and it's edited by Lee Child. And then the second one is Writing and Selling Your Mystery Novel, and this one's by Hallie Ephraim. These are both, like I said, they were both instrumental in developing the plot of A Knight of Knives and making sure, you know, because as someone who was diving back into writing kind of for the first time in a long time, I haven't read a lot of mysteries recently, and it was really important to me to get the mystery elements of the story right. And these books dive into mystery writing from all the way from like concepts to publication, and then, you know, trad publishing versus self-publishing for these things. So that it's very in-depth, and it was very helpful resources, especially if you struggle with like plot structure and things like that. It goes into like the typical plot points for, you know, or plot beats for mystery stories and things like that, and not in like a very formulaic like this is what you have to do, but more so to know the expectations of your readers as they pick up your book, and how you can effectively either follow those or maybe subvert them. So both great reads, and they're not terribly long either. I think they're both about 200 or 300 pages. I still go back to them from time to time, especially when I'm struggling with mystery elements in my story. I'm always afraid I'm always afraid of the mystery being too hard to solve or too easy. So these help in those situations. But yeah, highly recommend. They're both pretty cheap on Amazon. Great. Nice short reads, and definitely great if your story has any type of mystery elements, or if it's just, you know, if it is a mystery. Great reads, and I really enjoyed them.
Oh, that's excellent. No, that's great. I like how you share every now and then like physical books that are useful and like ones that you have used yourself. I think it's given me now I know what my resource for next week is going to be. But that's awesome. I feel like even if your novel doesn't exclusively have like a lot of mystery, maybe suspense or hiding the plot, like the actual plot or the intention, this could be really useful. So very cool.
Yeah, very much. Especially because I'm someone who likes to, like, I will probably never write a romance book in my life, but I would like to study the genre because I would like to have romance elements in future stories. I'm someone who kind of likes to blend genres or have elements of them together when I can. The biggest one, I know it's going off topic a little bit, but the biggest one I like to include is horror elements. But without writing a purely horror novel, just I like fantasy with horror elements in it, or fantasy with mystery elements. It's just really fun to me. But side note.
No, I love that. It is good. It's I feel like that just makes it a any story, a well-balanced, well-rounded story. And I feel like most of the people that we love to read from do that very effectively and very well. It's not going to be horror in a fantasy novel from V.E. Schwab, though she does write, horror. But it is going to be spooky at times, and there is going to be a sense of mystery, and there is a little bit of romance. So yeah, you have to be kind of like a jack of all trades when it comes to certain genres, or at least if you're writing the story that you're writing and it includes all those things. So oh, that's super helpful.
Well, I don't think there's anyone with us at the moment, so we can probably skip the questions and comments for this week. I will, I'm probably going to
Probably.
start putting out videos and asking on the book discords I'm on if for some topics and questions and comments, just because sometimes by the time we get to the end, we don't have any live audience members
Yeah,
anymore. So
that's all
I
right.
would probably going to broaden our net with that a little
Yeah.
bit, but
Yeah, definitely. Maybe like, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say before we sign off, is there anything, any closing comments, anything you want to share?
Don't think so. I'm always like, I think I'm good.
No,
I think,
same.
yeah, hopefully by next week I've got most of part two written for the anthology and finished both books. We'll see. We'll see how life goes,
Well, I'm very excited to read your anthology story when that is ready.
I'm excited to read yours. I need to read other people's. I'm just so behind. I'm always behind. There's no excuse, but
No, that's okay.
there's also every excuse in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I
All
think
right.
that's
Well,
gonna
another great
be,
episode.
that's gonna be all from us today. Hopefully you guys have a better week than it seems we're having, but also Ash, I hope your week gets
Yeah.
better and less stressful.
You too. Yes, same. Hopefully, we're both in office tomorrow, you and I both. So hopefully, it's
We'll tough it out
smooth
together.
sailing. Yeah, sorry.
All
All right, I'll see you next week, Brandon.
right, have a good week, Ash.
Bye.
Bye.